right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. If you're joining us for the first time, it's good to have you here. I'm Henrik. This is Red Ice TV, and we have a good show lined up for you today. We have a guest called James. He goes by the YouTube name Endeavor, or he is on YouTube by the name Endeavor. He also has a Twitter account, a Gab, and I stumbled across some of his videos. Some came up as related. I looked at a few more, and I thought, hey, this is a great guest. He's based out of Canada, and so a lot of things have actually been unfolding in Canada, including the Global Compact for Migration is going to be signed by Canada. There's a few nations that have pulled out. This is an item I wanted to discuss. There's also the issue of Trudeau, of course, actually subsidizing more money, tax money, mandatory money to the mainstream media. There are a couple of big stories like this that I want to get into today with our guests, but there's a number of other things that we have lined up, and we'll see what we can get to. But, you know, we have Brexit going on. We have the Yellow Jacket protests in Paris. There's rumors that it's going to spread even into Germany at this point. So, you know, a lot of good things to discuss. But let's bring on our guest here first. Thank you, Endeavor, for coming on, or James, I guess I can call you. But it's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me on, Henrik.
You bet. So before we just dive into some of the things about Trudeau and some of the recent things that have happened, tell us a little bit about the situation overall in Canada, if you can, and help us to diagnose the issue and the problem that you see it. Of course, you run a YouTube site. You've been doing videos very critical of what's happening in Canada with multiculturalism, with cultural Marxism, with all these globalist efforts that is happening to Canada and those who are seeking to kind of undermine the national homogeneity of Canada and so forth. But how would you explain to someone from the outside looking in? How do you view the problems right now in Canada?
Well, I'm a neo-reactionary. I make videos I call myself part of the reactosphere, as it's been labeled. And I really make videos about kind of the clown world that we live in, that, you know, you guys cover on a daily basis. And I try to come to the conclusions on, like, you know, what is it exactly that's causing these problems? You know, is it liberalism? Is it cultural Marxism? Is it the welfare state, or is it capitalism? It's really hard to really come to these conclusions, but the conclusion that reactionary thought tends to come to is that Canada and the West is really kind of going through this civilizational decay, that we keep getting wealthier, we keep advancing in technology, but as that goes on, we are essentially, like, all the pillars of our society are decaying. Our culture, our traditions, our sense of identity and nationality, our authority structure is really just all falling apart. And this is no different in Canada. I'd say it's probably one of the worst examples of this. I'd say Canada right now is really just in a denial of its own history, its own culture. And it really just denies its own existence in many ways. And, you know, when you look at Canadian history, when you look at the society around you, that there was this this proud country, there was this European, British, and French country that was built over the centuries. But over the last several decades, it's really we've really had the multicultural dogma really forced down our throats, and it's just a rapid decay. So yeah, I mean, I'd say the state of Canada and the West in general is that the society is really falling apart through various means. Its foundation is just collapsing, and we're kind of losing the faith to the belief in the preservation of our culture, our identity, our traditions, and even our people.
Now, do you see this ongoing for a long time in Canada? I mean, we can see it in the States, really beginning with maybe, you know, around the 60s. Obviously, there's some efforts before this, but it really begins to change on a noticeable level in the States with the Hart-Celler Act, for example. In the UK, you had a similar time frame. In Sweden, is more like in the 70s. Many European countries, of course, suffered under the 68 movement and stuff like that. But when do you pinpoint, rather, this the change taking place in society?
Well, I think that the wider change in Western civilization, a lot of it can be traced back to liberalism. And when I say liberalism, I don't necessarily mean like the Liberal Party of Canada or the Democratic Party or even the left. When I say liberalism, I mean kind of like democracy and the ideas of Rousseau, Locke, John Stuart Mill. And I find that these philosophies over time, they really just create like degradation. They really just constantly find this need to like tear down societal foundation. And that's been going on for well over a century. But I'd say that it's definitely in the last 50 years that it's picked up big time. In Canada, it's been the last 50 years. It started in the 60s, like in the United States. The big acts were the Multiculturalism Act of 1968. If anyone doesn't know what that is, it was essentially because Canada it had two cultures. It was British Anglo-Canadian culture and then French Canadian culture. And then of course there was also the natives. And what they said back then was that, well, we'll have this act to kind of reconcile those cultural differences, to kind of allow for that. What it actually did was it said that not only those cultures are valid, it's every culture in the world is just as valid under Canadian law and in our society. And that, you know, these two cultures have too much privilege and are too prominent. And it's really just been, it's this bait and switch kind of. It's been used over the last 50 years to deny our history, to deny really any real Canadian identity, and just been used to push globalist multiculturalism, really.
We want to get into later talking about the UN's Global Compact for Migration. This could potentially change a lot of things for the countries, rather, working as a kind of a legal framework for those to agree to it, for those who sign it. Canada is going to sign it. My country, Sweden, is going to sign it. Thankfully, US have backed out. Bulgaria backed out. Croatia, Hungary, Poland, I'm forgetting, Czech Republic. And I think there was, Israel, not surprisingly, they backed out.
Australia, I believe.
Australia, too. That's right. Exactly. So there is a number of countries that's kind of opposing to this. But before we go into that in detail and break that down, what did you make of the news story out of Breitbart in terms of the media situation in Canada, with Trudeau actually wanting to give mainstream media, or what they call authoritative sources or eligible media, tons and tons of tax relief, basically to ensure the survival? You told me before we started here that you have a similar system that we do in Sweden, with basically mandatory TV license fees to fund, you know, public service. You guys have CBC, that gets this money. So this, what's happening with this, is in addition to that already existing system. What do you think this means? And does it mean that Trudeau is going to effectively be able to buy the support of the media? And why is even this effort necessary, do you think?
Well, I think that here, like everywhere else, old media is dying off. And, you know, we've had the craze of the fake news outrage that the mainstream media came out with. I do like how, you know, we've kind of co-opted that line, fake news, and we've pushed it back against them. And basically it's designed to prop up the mainstream media and to keep the messages that we get constant. I mean, in Canada, the media is pretty bad. We have the CBC, which is actually government funded. It's a taxpayer funded news station. It's a radio station, news station, website, Twitter. And it's about as bad as you'd expect. Pretty much they're falling on the multiculturalism, Canadians are racist bandwagon. And they really have been pushing for this. They've really been pushing back against the populist movements in the United States and in Europe. And the CBC is about as bad as you can think. And every day they'll have a story about, you know, how some person was the victim of racism or this, that, and the other. And it's just, they basically need this to prop up these news sources, because, I mean, really, there is no justification for the insane policies that they're implementing. Like we can get into later just the immigration numbers alone. And yeah, they really just need that. They constantly need that propaganda source in order to constantly hold up that narrative that that everything's fine and dandy, and that, you know, those right wingers in America and in Germany and Italy, that, oh, they're just a bunch of racist, conspiracy theorists. And we have it right here. But yeah, they basically are trying to prop up their own narrative.
So taxes, there's only some sources, of course, that's going to get this, the so-called credible sources, right? But I see it as a desperate attempt. I don't know if you agree with me, but in a desperate attempt to try to salvage these old dinosaurs, as new incoming media is, who tells the truth, basically, effectively, or at least far more accurate about the kind of issues that really people are concerned with, which would include, of course, immigration, you know, the demographic situation overall, but also the economy, economic living standards, jobs, and, you know, all these kinds of things that these, you know, socialist parties, even liberal parties used to care about and used to, you know, at least have a semblance of honesty, I guess, in trying to tackle these issues, when today it's basically just switched over to being some kind of multicultural melting pot. It's all about immigration and open borders and letting everyone in. And of course, Trudeau has been an especially cucked individual when it comes to these questions. He has gone above and beyond, as far as I can tell anyway, any other previous Canadian prime minister. What would you say about Trudeau and the way that he's transformed Canada?
Well, I mean, Trudeau, I think it all started with his father, I think, because he was the one that brought in the Multiculturalism Act of 1968. You know, he's been the guy that's really forced, that he was the guy that really kicked off the kind of forced multiculturalism, the forced, just the blatant lies about Canadian history and Canadian culture. Trudeau, I'd say he's just kind of up, he's just really upped the ante of what's been going on for 50 years now. Yeah, of course, he pretty much says what you'd expect, just like Canada's a nation of immigrants. He even said that we have no real culture. He said that our culture is multiculturalism, our culture is immigration. And yeah, pretty much it's the same kind of narrative that we've been fed for years, just cranked up to 11 with Trudeau.
Yeah, it seems totally nuts, you know, in terms of how he's acted. You know, I showed some of the quotes there, but, you know, effectively talking about how, you know, talking about ISIS and ISIL, he has this approach that if you do end up fighting them, they actually win, right? So it's these hilarious comments he's made, you know.
Yeah, but I think that one of the mistakes that people often make is that I've heard people like say, I don't know, Milo Yiannopoulos or Gavin McInnes. I've heard them say, well, they're only censoring us because they that the best way to defeat your enemy is to let them speak, which is complete nonsense. If you want to cut someone's message off, if you want to defeat an enemy, you just don't let them have a message. And I find that the way that they're doing this is they're trying to make alt media unprofitable, really, because with, yeah, like, you look at Alex Jones, for instance, and I know you guys have been the victim of the same. He had this multi-million dollar empire, that alt media empire that he had built, and all that in one night just completely nerfed, just completely torn down. And, you know, from an investor standpoint, it does look like, you know, channels like Alex Jones, you know, Red Ice TV, and then individuals like, you know, Faith Goldie, Lauren Southern, Brittany Pettibone, all these people have been taken off of these payment platforms. If you can't make alt media profitable, then, you know, you're not going to get investment. And yeah, it's kind of like trying to force the investment back into the old media, trying to really cut off any financial viability that alt media might have. And we'll see how long it goes on for.
Hey, what do you make of some of the opposition from the conservatives? I guess Trudeau is a liberal party he's heading up, right?
Yes, he's the Conservative Party of Canada is pathetic. They're essentially a globalist party with lower taxes. They basically tend to the Liberal Party. You know, when the Liberals will do something outrageous, the Conservatives will complain for about a week about it, and then just act as if nothing ever happened. But we have a new political party started by Maxime Bernier. It's called the People's Party of Canada. I know it kind of sounds like a communist party, but they actually are like an actual right-wing party. They're an actual populist party. You know, the Conservative Party is basically just a globalist party at this point. They've made immigration one of their issues. They've made, you know, free trade one of their issues, that, you know, and restricting these, you know, big trade deals. And Bernier has brought up the UN Migration Pact in Parliament, which was very encouraging. There's no way that Trudeau's government won't sign that pact. I mean, because, you know, it's Justin Trudeau, but it is encouraging that we do now actually have a opposition voice. So, you know, the party might not be exactly where I'd like them to be, but I think that it's a good start.
How about, what's her name? Michelle Rempel. She's a conservative. She has been speaking out. I got a notice of some of her videos because she was talking about this issue with the media. She's, you know, very, very on the issue of free speech, which is good. Is she a strong enough candidate to actually oppose the things happening in Canada? Or is it more of these kinds of, you know, low tier conservatives, which basically don't have a true backbone when it comes down to it?
A lot of the Conservative Party basically is the no backbone kind of they'll speak out about something, but then they'll never actually do anything about it. That's the situation we've really had with the Conservative Party for a while. The leader of the Conservative Party is a complete I don't know what to say about him. He's just complete jello. But it is encouraging that we do now actually have an actual right-wing party, and hopefully that, if anything, brings the Conservative Party more to the right.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go into this issue of talking about the Global Compact for Migration and what your take on that is, because it seems to be an incredible transformation that could occur potentially in terms of the legal framework that this could set. You know, we've heard from, you know, some of the nations that have shown concern about it. Well, it's not binding. It's okay. But actually weaved into the context of this, you have really worrying language. Specifically, Article 14 mentions how basically any criticism of migration, any negative focus on the issue of refugees and things like that is basically going to be outlawed. There was even a couple of guys out of the European Union that voiced their concern for that. I guess we can actually listen to that first. And I want to get your take on that and how you see that potentially could transform it. Because, you know, as we said before, Canada is going to sign it. UK is going to sign it. Sweden is going to sign it. And it could end up in a situation where those who reject it this might somewhat be spared. I know that's still the issue, at least in the European Union, that they are putting pressure on nations that are EU members and say, well, you have to take your quota and fair share and all that stuff. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is what a concerned member, I forget which party in the EU he's from, but it's a Dutch gentleman that talks about how this will be framed in the context of hate speech if you do start criticizing it. Just check this out.
Dear guests, it's nice to have you here on our Strasbourg press conference. And I would like to say some words on the Global Compact on Migration. On the 10th and 11th of December, there will be an international congress in Marrakech, Morocco, with regard to this Global Compact on Migration. And the participating countries are set to sign this agreement. And although this joint agreement isn't binding, it's still meant to be the legal framework on which the participating countries commit themselves to build new legislation. And one basic element of this new agreement is the extension of the definition of hate speech. The agreement want to criminalize migration speech. Criticism of migration will become a criminal offense. And media outlets, and that also concerns you, that give room to criticism of migration can be shut down. The Compact for Migration is legalization of mass migration. It's declaring migration as a human right. So in fact, it will become impossible to criticize Ms. Merkel's welcome migrants politics without being at risk to be jailed for hate speech. So this agreement.
Right. He goes on from there and talks, you know, kind of further about what could happen and what would this entail and how basically people are critical can end up in jail for talking about this. What do you make of the Global Compact? And I mean, again, I know it's not a technically a binding agreement, but as the gentleman said, it is going to act as the legal framework for how, you know, countries are supposed to act. And again, imagine if a country all of a sudden votes in a government in place, which basically says, we don't want migrants anymore, or we have to start considering re-migration or something like that. Countries could be subjected to sanctions. You could have pressure on these countries like you have on Russia right now or something like that, or even worse, like what we saw in the Balkans back in the 90s. What do you make of it? And what do you think the consequences are going to be for the country signing this compact?
Well, I think that seeing what we've seen over the last like 5-6 years, it's no doubt that they say it's not binding, but we all know what it's going to be. It's that basically you have to take migrants, and then if you don't, well, then you know, it's sanctions against you. It's basically making taking in migrants mandatory, and in many ways, it limits a state's even ability to be sovereign in any way, because you know, you can't, if you can't control your own borders, then you don't really have much of a country at all. And I also find that it's just going to be used to justify basically everything, like everything we saw in the migration crisis back in 2015. It's going to be used to justify that. And the other thing you also see is that the definition of who's a refugee keeps changing. Like, you know, it used to mean someone who was specifically targeted for political persecution in their country. Then it meant someone who was escaping a war. And well, now it means basically anyone who just lives in a poor country. And like one thing that you'll notice is that back in 2015, they were talking about Syria. They were talking about the war in Syria. They don't talk about that anymore. They just say now you have to take migrants, and that's just that. And yeah, I mean, everyone knows where this thing's going. It's basically you don't have a state, and you don't have borders, pretty much. So your country doesn't exist.
I mean, it's horrendous what's happening. And Trudeau was actually commenting on this. Let's just check out what he actually said about it.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, we will not be withdrawing from the UN Global Pact on Immigration. It's essential to continue to show respect for immigration, our understanding that immigration and accepting refugees must be done. We are a country that has been built on accepting people who came here to build a better life. We have a population that supports immigration because they know that we have a robust and safe system. Even with irregular crossings, we continue to enforce our immigration policies.
Calgary, Nose Hill.
Except people who have reached the safety of upstate New York are not the world's most vulnerable people, Mr. Speaker. The UN Global Compact on Migration directs the countries to, quote, sensitize media on what to say with regard to immigration. Now, and given that this Prime Minister disparages, name calls, bullies, anyone who dares to question his severe inability to manage Canada's borders or manage the integrity of our asylum system, Conservatives oppose the signing of this agreement. Will the Prime Minister withdraw Canada from this agreement and close the loophole in the Safe Third Country Agreement?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the world is seeing unprecedented levels of men, women, and children displaced by war and by persecution. Our government is proud to have taken a leadership role on the Global Compact. This is the first time the international community has worked together to develop a comprehensive set of principles to better manage this phenomenon. It is disappointing to see the Conservatives engage in peddling rebel media conspiracy theories while we work with the international community to protect our robust immigration system.
All right, it's interesting. You mentioned rebel media there. Of course, they do some good work. I'm not going to put them all down, but we have to emphasize that again, you know, in terms of the fact that it's about, you know, honing the media narrative. It's kind of weaved into this to a certain extent, which, of course, ties into with the money that we talked about earlier as a way of starving out any potential, you know, dissident voices. And then if you do still, after all those economic, I guess we shouldn't call them sanctions, but you know what's happening. You comment on it yourself in terms of how, you know, YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and all these outlets have Silicon Valley outlets have working in unison to deplatform, you know, outlets and individuals at the same time. The purging has just stepped up and up and up and up. So they've lost control of the narrative. They have to go in and try to manage it somehow. So they try to starve them out economically so they can't make money. Then they try to just block them out altogether so they can't reach any people. And even after all those items, if you will, they're still there and it's not good enough. And still these messages are getting to people. So now what if they criminalize just criticism of open borders? Because what are we supposed to do? I mean, we have to, we can't participate in the democratic process when it comes to these issues of migration, right? I mean, we have, like, what country ever has voted on how much immigrants we're supposed to have or take in, or even if people want it overall? We haven't. So our only discourse, our only way is to raise awareness about it, get people to wake up to the issue, and then get people to change it by voting on those parties, or people at least that well, at the very least want to limit it, but hopefully you have candidates that actually want to stop it altogether so we can take control again of our countries demographically. But that's my point. That's not happening at all. We're not allowed to even raise the concerns anymore. And what if they now are going to bring in this issue that it's going to be considered hate speech just to say, listen, we shouldn't have open borders. It's bad. Okay. You know, what's left? You know, what can we do? What can we turn to?
Well, yeah, I think that the problem is that you can only brainwash people. You can only silence people so long. It's like, first they tell you it's great. Then they take away, they ban you from the platforms that you're saying you're voicing your opposition. And then who knows, maybe eventually they'll just end up criminalizing it. I don't know. But the thing is, like, I think that they know that they kind of that they're kind of in hot water here, because like I find that as time goes on, there's just less and less justification for this stuff. And I mean, basically that's just Justin Trudeau, you know, his typical quotes. Like, I like how he said irregular border crossing. Like, you know, I wonder what that's supposed to mean.
Right.
It's an interesting way of saying illegal border crossing. But yeah, I mean, the thing that one positive is that with the UN Migration Pact and with all this is that it's kind of just becoming so like just blatant what they're doing. And like we can look at the UK and how they've flubbed Brexit so hard. And I hope that at least people kind of see the truth for what it is eventually. And because I mean, they're running out of ways to excuse it. Like, you know, they originally told us that it's good for the economy. Well, looks like it actually isn't good for the economy. They told us, like, you know, it'll culturally enrich us. Well, it's not culturally enriching us. And then eventually they're just going to have to say, well, you know, you have to do it. And then I think, you know, the excuses are wearing out, I find.
Yeah, they are, exactly. And I mean, again, what are they going to do next? What level are they going to have to step this up to continue the program? Because we see a rise of populism and nationalism around in the West, thankfully, you know, after years of the globalists just completely hoodwinking people and not being able to, criticize, you know, basically what's happening. But the question is if it's good enough, and if it's in time, or if the window is closing. And again, I don't mean to be negative, but the fact is that the demographics is bad enough as it is, even with the current, levels of migrants that we have in many Western countries. So the only resort, of course, is to begin to talking about remigration and stuff like that. But, you know that the UN is running population replacement programs. It's funny, I'm trying to click in on the story on the UN site. That's funny. I don't know what that means. I can't reach it right now. It says not found. Looks like they've deleted it. I'm looking at the Google search. So I don't know if they've removed something or whatever. But anyway, they have a program that is about replacing the population in the West. And of course, this is one way of doing it, right? Of basically just saying, well, this is a migration is a human right. And anybody who wants to migrate to another country should be able to do so. But the question is, do you think Canadians could just walk down into, I don't know, Honduras, or if you would get over to Saudi Arabia or even Israel or something like that, would you be welcome? Could we just go into any country that we wanted to?
Well, of course not. I mean, you know, this is the problem with all these like international laws, all these the UN and all these kind of liberal policies, is that it only affects those who actually follow them. So, you know, you can let people into your country, but they're not going to return the favor. And, you know, it's kind of the constant cycle of whoever kind of follows the liberal consensus gets taken advantage of. And I mean, yeah, where those things came about, but yeah, that's what I just find is that, with these laws, it's just whoever's dumb enough to actually follow them, that's who gets taken advantage of in many ways.
It's so sad, you know, to see this and in the way that it's being done. Do you think that the signing of the agreement, I believe Canada did it, right? Was it last weekend that the signing took place, or there was a protest. That's what it was, right? Because the actual signing is in Morocco on the December 10th to 11th at Marrakech. That's right. I know that there was a protest. Were you there? Did you see how that went, by the way?
No, I didn't make it to the protest, but it was good that people are voicing their opinions. Faith Goldie took part in it, which She's been doing a lot of good work on getting the word about the migration pact out. A few other organizations took part. I know ID Canada was there. I think maybe the Proud Boys and a couple other of right wing organizations showed up. So it's at least good that there's people voicing their opinions. But insofar as a popular movement, so far pretty much we don't have enough. The word's not out to enough people. Not enough people know about it yet and certainly don't know about the consequences of it yet to actually really mount any major opposition to it. But hopefully maybe this next election year, hopefully that can become an issue. Hopefully migration and the UN migration pact can become an issue in Canadian politics. And I hope that is under discussion come 2019 when there's an election.
Now, do you think that there's reason for concern in terms of how you mentioned Proud Boys, for example? I think it's worth mentioning them being targeted specifically by the New York elite in this case. I guess Cuomo, the governor, some of these other people have really gone after them. And again, in consideration to how mellow they are, frankly, and how laid back many of those guys are, and they're not really hard on certain issues, and it's like a fraternity, kind of a drinking club / fraternity kind of thing. But they were fighting back. They were fighting back against left-wing, ultra-left-wing extremism, Antifas, and this kind of stuff. They were winning many of those fights. And, of course, that doesn't show well for them, I guess. And it shows that there's it's an opposition to these, last resort threatening violent groups that's out there on the left to basically shame and get people to be scared away from going out and doing street activism, basically. So if you have right-wing groups that are winning on the street level over that and have a pushback against these groups, it would basically entail that more people would be emboldened, I guess we could say, to go out and participate in nationalist events and anti-globalist events and kind of stuff like that. So I think it's important for the establishment to have groups like the Antifa and really violent left-wing groups there as a kind of a final resort to threaten violence so that people, normal people, regular people, family people, mothers, fathers, to go out and to show their discontent in terms of what's happening in their countries, right? Do you think that that's why they're coming down so hard on some of these right-wing groups? Or why do you think that that's happening right now?
Well, I think it's for the same reason, is that like they know that like they're having a really hard time justifying the continuation of these ridiculous policies. And they kind of do need to come down on these groups. And kind of the problem we have is that, you could look at the mainstream media, you could look at groups like Antifa, but the problem is that if it doesn't really matter what Antifa does, the mainstream media won't report on it. And basically whatever right-wing groups do, their mainstream media will blow it out of proportion. So in terms of the narrative, we are really kind of up against the wall. And that's why alternative media is so important, because it's how you actually can get out the counter narrative. But yeah, they do have the ability that they can just label, the Proud Boys an extremist group. They can basically just give them a reason to shut you down. And Antifa doesn't have that problem. They can get away with a lot more than they can get away with like violent protests, but no right-wing groups can even get away with peaceful protests, you find.
Yeah, exactly. I look at the farce of or what probably is going to happen with the Charlottesville trial of James Fields right now and stuff like that. It's just going to be a big circus, I think, around that. And again, despite the fact that there was independent reports coming out and showing how the police were irresponsible, they were basically the ones that, pushed the right-wing people who were there to protest the removal of the statue of Robert E. Lee. They push them into the hands of the Antifa. They defend themselves. And again, they're the ones getting charged with all these crimes and violent crimes and stuff like that. It's absolutely amazing. And same with Proud Boys, right? They were defending themselves. And it's like you have to take the beating. You have to be potentially beaten to death and killed, because if you put up a fight back, you guess what? You're the one they're going to go to jail. There's really no question, if you know what I mean, in terms of what side really is dictating the narrative and just running kind of the cultural framework, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because it's yeah, just look at the intelligentsia, the media, the universities. That I mean, when when progressive ideology has so much dominance in these institutions, they can really just decide what's true and what isn't. I mean, like, for example, they've just changed the definition of the word racism over the last few years. You know, they just changed it to mean that basically, if you're white, you're racist. And I mean, they just have the ability to decide what's true and what isn't when you have like all these powerful institutions on your side. I think that Charlottesville was kind of like a touchdown for them. It gave them the narrative that they wanted. And it kind of just gave them the ability to kind of write everyone, to write basically all nationalists up as these cartoonish thugs, really. And unfortunately, I find that it did give them that ability to do that. And that's kind of the risk you run with public events, because you don't really know who's going to show up. And I just think that's why, you know, we have to be a lot more optically conscious than the people on the left, because, you know, the left can have as bad optics as possible. The mainstream media will take their side.
So exactly.
That's kind of just why you got to make sure that when your message gets out, it's one that they can't use against you, because they will. And we've seen that.
Let's go back to the migration pact here as well a little bit and talk about some of the countries that have bailed out, right? So six countries so far, and counting, luckily, are backing out. As I said before, Bulgaria, it was surprising. Hungary, Austria, Poland, Czech Republic, Croatia, the U.S., of course, and Australia as well backed out. I was surprised that Australia did that. That's really good. They're going back to some sensible policies on this again. Do you think more countries will back out? The window is closing December 10th, 11th, but there's still a couple of weeks left. What do you think?
I hope so. Has Italy already backed out? I can't remember.
No, as far as I've heard, they have not. I mean, obviously, I was hoping that Salvini was going to be able to do something on this, but I've not heard anything. Israel, too, I forgot to mention, by the way.
Well, we can just see the problems with it. They're just so apparent and just so blatant. Yeah, hopefully more back out. It would be good if Italy could back out, because Bulgaria backing out is actually a specifically good thing, because it's been one of the countries that's been along the route to Europe.
That's right.
It's been used from people to get from Turkey into Europe, and then once they're in Bulgaria, then they can get to anywhere in Europe. So if they can cut off that gate, that would be very useful. And the other major landing point was Italy, and there's been a lot of encouraging things in Italy recently with Salvini and with their kind of change in direction and the nationalist movement going on there. That's encouraging. I do hope that they pull out of the pact. There's no way that Canada is going to pull out, but I do think that at least we have a voice of opposition now, which is better than we had like a year or two ago. So I don't know. Hopefully more pull out, but I wouldn't hold my breath for the bigger countries. Like, there's no way that I don't think Britain or France, Germany. I don't think there's any way they'll pull out.
Yeah, we'll have to see. How would you compare the People's Party in Canada to? Would it be like an AFD in Germany? Maybe more like Sweden Democrats than maybe Alternative for Sweden?
I'd say they're kind of like either the Sweden Democrats or UKIP or. Maybe not to quite the extent of the AFD, but they're along that path. So they're a populist party. They're against globalism. They're against mass immigration. Although, in all fairness, they want to reduce immigration, but not by quite enough, I think. But at least it's a step in the right direction. I don't think they're a savior by any stretch. But at the same time, it's good that we actually have a populist party as an option now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about time. You know, we have articles like this coming out of McLean's, right? Canada could lead the world in resettling refugees by 2020, passing the U.S. And again, I don't know if that's per capita or even in the amount of numbers that the U.S. take in. But regardless, this is very worrying for the future of Canada as being able to sustain itself or continue. Interestingly, I don't know if you saw that clip, but there's a woman called Angela Nagel. She's written a couple of articles for The Atlantic about the alt-right. She's written about basically recognizing the reality of dispossession and even the replacement migration agenda. She comes from the left. She did write a book on it, too. I forget the title. Lost Boys, I think it was, or maybe it was the article that was titled Lost Boys. But regardless, she was basically of the point of view that she was basically harping against the left, despite being a leftist, because the speed at which they're doing this is so noticeable so that people are actually waking up. So her proposal was, for the love of God, stop it so that they don't wake up, right? we have to do it slowly because otherwise they'll wake up, they realize what is going on, basically. And at that point, if they get angry, especially if, you know, young white guys get angry, then that could upset the whole political system in the future, or even the order as they see fit. What do you make of something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the one mistake I think they made was definitely they overstepped their bounds, and I think that probably 2015 was the moment where they did that with the refugee crisis in Europe. I mean, it was just so like blatant of a betrayal of really just their own country and their own borders, and it was just so obvious that they had no intention to protect their own countries, their own orders, their own culture, or their own people. And, you know, I think that they may have, that is one good thing, that they may have overstepped their bounds, because, you know, you have to remember that this has been going on for 50 years now. And it's only within the last five years or so that people have really been starting to wake up to it. So yeah, she's definitely right that they have in many ways cranked up the intensity of it to a bit too high of a degree. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was that, in Canada, it's what they're pretty much using is it's cultural manipulation. Really, it's kind of like gaslighting people into believing that you know, diversity has always been our creed. We've always been a multicultural country, and and just what they've been using for that is just the constant pounding of you know, white guilt, of historical revisionism. And the big one from this week was that they're changing the Canadian $10 bill. They're changing, they're taking John A. Macdonald, our first Prime Minister of Canada, they're taking him off the $10 bill. They may be putting him on a different bill, but I can't remember, but they're taking him off the bill and replacing him with a woman named Viola Desmond. I mean, this is just ridiculous, because no one's ever heard of who Viola Desmond is. Apparently, until they announced that they're putting her on the bill, I had never heard of her in my life. And there was even an article in the Globe and Mail about a week ago that it literally said in the article, the title was, "Who is Viola Desmond, this person on the bill?" So like, if they have to tell us who they are, obviously they're not a very significant historical figure. basically who she is, she was a black woman that apparently was kicked out of a movie theater in 1946. It was kind of like a Rosa Parks situation.
Oh God.
But it's not even the same though, because it was in Nova Scotia, and Nova Scotia never actually had like segregation laws. Apparently what happened was that the owner of the movie theater that he wanted to reserve the seating floor of the movie theater for a white guest, and he wanted her to sit on the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she wanted to sit in the main section, but he would only sell her a ticket to the balcony, but then she sat in the main section anyway. And she was actually arrested and charged for, it wasn't even for breaking any segregation laws, because they didn't even exist in Nova Scotia at the time. It was for not paying the right amount of tax on the ticket that she had, not paying enough tax to sit in the place that she had sat, which, I don't even see how that's an indictment against the Canadian government at the time. If anything, it'd be an indictment against some random movie theater. It's just such an obscure story, and it's just such a, it's just them like just stooping to such lows to drum on white guilt. I mean, it's just ridiculous that this one story that no one had ever heard of from 1946, of this person being kicked out of a movie theater, of this black woman being apparently kicked out of a movie theater, this person's on our $10 bill. I mean, it's just not, it's just ludicrous. And as much historical revisionism that's gone on in Canada, everyone still knows who John A. Macdonald is. No one knows who Viola Desmond is. And you know, no one would actually support this unless they just simply want, they simply just want to push an anti-white agenda, because
yeah.
I mean, it's basically just a way of saying, well, look how horrible Canadians were, you know, back when it was a white country. And you also have to remember at the time, this was before mass immigration. So Canada was about 96% white at the time, which meant, and then the majority of the non-white population was the native population. So it's just them like just reaching so deep into the bottom of the barrel and just scraping that bottom of the barrel to just find any way to drum up white guilt. It's just, I don't even know what to say about it. It's just like, it just shows how desperate they are. And it just shows how desperate they are to just push this message, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's symbolic, right? That's what it's about. We have the same in Sweden. They have, you know, we have some famous people, kings, and, you know, like Carl von Linné, he's like one of the kind of botanist. He was behind naming a lot of the plants and, you know, flora and fauna, basically Latin. I think he has the most interlinked connections, or whatever you want to call it, links basically to his name tied to Wikipedia, for example, stuff like that. But, you know, they're seeking to replace these old white men, these individuals, and as you say, put minorities on there, put people who are not historically really belonging to the country in question. And I see that these as symbolic efforts, if you will, to demoralize our ability to, how do I put it, to still have the sense that the country belongs to us, right? It belongs to us, the descendants of the people who built the country. And one could say, well, who cares? It's just a $10 bill. It's just an image or something like that. But it's not about that. It's about the symbolic message that's entailed and weaved into that. And it doesn't stop. This is the thing with the $10 bill. It's everything. It's names on roads and schools and statues. And, you know, it's happening. The deconstruction endeavor is in full swing. And we are the ones who are being lambasted for simply pointing it out. No media, no major mainstream media outlets is remotely even discussing the biggest, population replacement, exactly, that has ever happened in the history of people handing over control to another group in this way. They're not talking about it, and we're the only ones doing it, and now they're trying to limit our ability to do that.
Yeah, and I find that you know, people have a culture, names, historical events, historical figures. It gives people a connection to their land. It gives people a sense of like who they are and a sense of identity and a sense of tradition and history. And you know, you can just say, well, it's just something minor, but it's just a slow burn. It's a slow like erasing us from our own histories, and that it's so that you can justify all this stuff. I mean, this, like, for example, they said they wanted to do was they said they wanted to have like a woman on one of the bills, even though we already have the queen on one of the bills. But even from that perspective, though, they could have picked like someone like, say, Emily Carr. She was a famous Canadian painter from the early 20th century. But I mean, and many people know who Emily Carr is. If they wanted to have a woman on the bill, why wouldn't they choose her? But then they choose someone that is so obscure. And another funny thing that I looked up was that apparently she left Canada later in her life. She moved up. She moved away, and it had nothing. And apparently didn't even have anything to do with the movie theater incidents. She just didn't want to live there. So yeah, apparently our national hero is just kind of like, kind of just want to go live in New York instead.
I remember it was a while. All the celebrities and all these famous people in the election campaign of Trump said that they were going to move to Canada. Did a single one end up doing that? You know,
no, that didn't. None of the celebrities ended up moving here, but a lot of the illegal migrants who had gotten into the United States realized that it'd be a lot easier to take advantage of Canada. So this year, we've actually had what Trudeau would call irregular border crossings, as in illegal immigration. That's been a crisis that we've had this year. There's been, I think it's been over 50,000 illegal border crossers that are still in the country. I haven't been up to date on those numbers, so we don't actually know exactly what those numbers are. But it just kind of goes back to just the blatancy of Trudeau's agenda. It's just, as much immigration as possible.
Yeah, it's nuts. I have a clip. We can play that in the second part. We're going to take a break here in just a little bit. There's more that we can discuss when it comes to both Trudeau, but I do want to get your take on, see if we can squeeze in a little bit on Brexit. But before we take a break, tell us about your YouTube channel, Endeavor. And of course, you're on Twitter under the same name, I think Royal Endeavor, and also on Gab.
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel. My channel's titled Endeavor. I talk about, you know, various things from our culture, from, you know, the kind of crazy world we're living in. And really what my channel's main focus is reactionary thought. So it's as in trying to explain these various problems that I find that the liberal order that we're under really isn't able to explain, and trying to explain them through a pre-enlightenment more on human nature, and rather than the liberal kind of enlightenment mentality that our leaders have had for several decades. The main focus of my channel on Twitter, also at Royal Endeavor, and I have a BitChute account, which YouTube channel, and pretty much all my stuff there in case me off. But yeah, so that's what I do on YouTube, and yeah, you can come over and check out my videos.
Absolutely. Again, we're getting a little bit of a bad connection between us. Hopefully that clears up to the second part here. Briefly, though, before we break, you did a video recently where you said that you had covered a lot of the, again, I guess what we've talked about here so far, the diagnosing of the problem, and really the, not blackpilling, but just kind of alerting people to a lot of the same things to a certain extent, you know, over and over that we have to harp. And you know, in many cases, we have new people coming to these kinds of questions and concern for where our countries are going and stuff like that. So it's okay, and it's a good reason to repeat basically those messages. But you did a video that was basically you talking about changing direction a little bit and try to put focus on some other issues. Tell us about that briefly.
Well, I think that there's a lot of people in our spheres that really kind of figured out the problems by now. Like, we know the problems of things like immigration. We know the problems of things like Islam and demographics and all that stuff. I think that I pretty much covered that. And I think that you guys cover it all the time. There's plenty of channels that do. What I would like to kind of look at is kind of the more cultural issues, more historical stories, and really kind of analyze them and see what we can really learn from them. I think that that message is out. I think, though, that there's a lot else wrong with the world that, you know, we have, that really, if we look into it, we can find that our civilization really is lacking in many, many ways. And really, a lot of these problems are the result of that. And that's kind of what I want to look at going forward. I have a video coming out about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's a psychological study that was written in 1943. And what I want to do is I want to look at that and see how it really compares to modern society, and how, like, the modern West really is just lacking in things like culture and things like purpose and in community, and really how that kind of has degraded over time. So that's what I have coming up. And I'll also be appearing on Millennial Yule on Millennial Woes channel in December. So you can keep an eye out for that.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Check it out. We'll have links down in the description, both to his Twitter, his Gab, and to the YouTube channel. So if you want to find out more, head on over there, check out some of the videos, a lot of good stuff, past videos that he's done too. Not overall just about Canada, but also the situation in the West overall. So a lot of good things there. But yeah, we'll just take a short break here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to continue our conversation after this. Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we continue with James or Endeavor in part two at redicemembers.com, just want to let you know that we have a couple of shows coming up here on the Charlottesville trial. We're also going to be trying to reach a couple of guys in France to talk about the Yellow Vest movement and try to decode a little bit of what that's about. And actually, in part two with James or Endeavor, we'll begin talking about that, because it's an interesting sign, if you will, of discontent against the establishment in France. So we'll talk about that and dissect a little bit some of the things that's been happening in France. We'll also move on to discuss Brexit, the bad deal for the UK, or for the British people, I should say, and many other topics as well. So make sure that you join us at redicemembers.com for part two. You get full access to all the shows that we've done back to our start in 2006. It's a great way to support us. And if you are new to the show, definitely make sure you check out Weekend Warrior as a member as well. A really good show that we do, a news roundup, if you will, at the end of the weekend. In addition to that, we do Flashback Friday as well, a new kind of feature that we've started up. Just do a laid-back stream on Fridays, talk about some of the stories that we won't be able to squeeze in into the Weekend Warrior show. But coming up this weekend, we won't be doing Flashback Friday or Weekend Warrior. We're actually going to a wedding, so we'll be busy. We'll be out of the studio, but we'll continue as usual, of course, on the weekend after that. But we'll continue with part two with Endeavor right now on the members' website. Thank you for watching or for listening. We'll see you guys after the break.